Blog Talk Radio.
Listening to The Garden of Enlightenment with Liu Yu Wild Dove and Grey Eyes Smith. Unfortunately, Liu Yu Wild Dove is under the weather and won't be calling in tonight. That said, tonight's show is brought to you by a group on allpoetry.com called Late Night Poets, and we also have anthologies available on amazon.com. under the same moniker. And tonight's show is based on September's Front Page Picks contest by N. Nabhany, and it goes, "I want to write different words for you, to invent a language for you alone, to fit the size of your body and size of my love," by N. Kubani. And then some open poetry as well. So that's the gist of tonight's show. And I'm going to check the studio real quick here. And we have a caller. Hello, Weaver.
Hello. How are you?
I'm great, thanks. How are you?
I'm not too bad. Excuse me. My voice isn't wonderful, but if I cough, I'll be better.
Oh, okay. Thank you for calling in to co-host with me tonight. I appreciate that, as does Liu.
Oh, my pleasure.
So if you want to get the first poem posted, that would be great.
Of course, no problem at all. Here we have Hate Fluently by Peacock Secret Poetry. And would you like to read that? This a gentleman, would you like to read this one?
Sure, okay. This is called Hate Fluently by Peacock Secret Poetry. When they do it versus when we do it. Don't be in the minority, because then even your own mother tongue speaks against you. Like when we do it, it's called black nationalism. But when they do it, it's called white supremacy. Huh. Y'all, I'm going to fix this. Here it is. White inferiority complex. You're welcome. When they do it, it's ethnic cleansing. When others do it, it's genocide. Guess whose dirt is on the inside? When one of us did it, we were called gunmen, thugs, gangsters. When they do it, it's called, yesterday was a really bad day for him, and this is what he did. It's called, let's stop by Burger King. It's called armed militias of patriots. It's called good people on both sides. When it was us, they exclaimed, Muslim fundamentalists, Islamists, terrorists. When it was them, they forgot about their religion, saying, January 6th rioters, insurrectionists, seditionists, protesters, and patriots. When it was us, they accused every Muslim of jihad. When it was them, they embarked on another personal crusade. Crusade is the English Christian linguistic translation of jihad. And I know my history. So you go Google the nine crusaders and their violent blood paths before you respond to me. When the world protested for justice, they whined, it's these BLM riots. Tiny print, mostly peaceful. When Sportsfan did it, their newscasters announced, drunken revelry, excited fans, tiny print, some property damage. When they sang it, they said they liked heavy metal, hard rock, gothic music, murder ballads. They said it's all art, America's First Amendment, freedom of speech, yada yada. Yet when we rapped it, they ruled rap lyrics inadmissible in court. Only rap, no other genre, huh? Why, I wonder. When it's not America, oh my God, they impose communism. Oh my God, they enforce socialism. That's when it's them, they are proud to announce they are going to bring democracy to Afghanis who didn't want our war and didn't get to vote for us to come. When it's another's dying in war started by the U.S., there is no orphans or widows charity, no GoFund Afghanistan, Iraq, Yemen. Please, but when it's them, it's support our troops and thank you for our service. They call other leaders the president of XYZ company. They call theirs the leader of the free world. Which part of this world is free? Then which part is unfree? Why isn't the U.S. president leading the unfree world too? Did either the free or the unfree get to vote democratically for the so-called leader of free humanity? When it's us, they use an excuse. Africans sold other Africans into slavery too. When it's them, they forgot. Rome had enslaved gladiators, or isn't that true? Moses' African Israelites were even enslaved in Egypt. Then they talk about black-on-black crime. yet they completely forget Europeans sold out Europeans too. 2 million Polish people, 6 million Jews, 3 million more Romanis, plus Soviets and political dissenters, all of which began with murders of people with delays and disabilities, all actively attacked and doomed by other Europeans for being true to their God-given DNA or their nations or views. When it was us, they named Harriet Tubman Black Moses. When it was them, they forgot the stupidity of white actors portraying an African, an ancient Egyptian named Moses, so superbly stupid, just like Euro-American enslavers in church standing, singing a Negro spiritual, accidentally. Let my people go. When we wear hijabs, we somehow seem to be oppressed, forced by our husbands. When they wear habits, they somehow seem to be pious nuns. But if there are wives of Christ, who was it who beat them into their habits? When it's us, they say Islam was spread through the word. When it's them, they say you heathens needed missionaries and conquistadors too to find the fountain of youth, to get the gold of El Dorado, and America needed manifest destiny, plus imperialism, colonialism, and God Save the Queen. When it's us, they didn't fathom any of our nations had ever had multitudes of monarchies or nobles or royalty, but British monarchs are still the Queen and the royals. No need to mention which country, all for an island nation hellbent on her hegemony over humanity. All around the world, when it's our homes, we supposedly live in villages. When it's in their homes, they live in hamlets, towns, suburbs, and counties. When it's us, they assume black and Hispanic men deserve this verbiage. Gangbangers, thugs, cartels, hoodlums. When it's them, they forgot about the mafia, mob bosses, and godfathers. What twisted terminology, biases based on genealogy. When they cross their chests anywhere, we don't care. We prostrate on the football field. They run change the rules. Kindly don't look like a Muslim in public. Such a privilege is only for us Christians, you see. When weed was sold on our blocks, we got full body contacted by the cops. When they sold the same weed crops, they quickly got contacted by the IRS. Meanwhile, our bros rot in a box, arrested, in prison, distressed. When we travel, we are called illegals, foreigners, aliens, immigrants, job stealers, rapers, murderers, not their best people, but not them. They are explorers, expatriates, spending a year abroad. They are backpacking through Asia, but they are not beggars and bums. In fact, their fathers are proudly deployed overseas. They called us Hispanic and named only themselves after the entire continent. This is America. So is America. So is Mexico. North America, to be exact. But no. Only they get to be American. When other nations do it, they're called oppressive regimes. When the KKK, the USA, does it, so-called democracy, makes you forget women's suffrage, blocking voters' rights, gerrymandering, and need I go on. When it happened to them, I heard terms like Holocaust, concentration camps, genocide, movies made year after year. I cry out, can we get some similar Hollywood attention here on what happened to you? And I, not enough movie stars to shine a light on the Trans-Pacific slave trade, Japanese internment camps, immigration, detention centers, and colonial invasions that caused the genocide and extinction of whole nations, empires, and tribes. So why? Why is Christopher Columbus celebrated by those who said they hate Hitler? We said white privilege. Karen said no, white male privilege. They got the opioid crisis. We got the crack epidemic. We got homemade, and they got artisanal. We got your hair is coarse. They got your hair is silky and fine like wine. Excuse my coarse language, but what the hell? We know you're lying. We got urban. They got heart of the city. We got melanated person and person of color. They got person, period. Am I supposed to be melanated, like colored? As if God made mankind and then added color last? Nah, this melanin was in the mix since the beginning. Adam's skin, made of black-sounding clay. Give them demelanated. Demelanin. Give them melanin, poor people of low melanin. I'm not a POC, because they are not called people of clear. So don't you dare name me. I am not the anomaly. Name them. They are the palm. We got African American, Asian American, Hispanic American, Native American. How did they get European American? Nope, they got American, period. We got called black, like blackballed. They got white, like lily white. Then they taught it to the kids. Snow White, Goldilocks, Disney's White Fantasies, Rapunzel, Ariel's Kingdom, and Jasmine, the bare-bellied Muslim princess. Sheesh. I'm so tired of your linguistic microaggressions, lying, subtle allegations, whitewashed, brainwashed words. So I'm blackmailing you back with this blacklist, terms and adverbs, blackface, yellow peril, redskins in this nation's capital. We see you and the hate you speak. Each bigoted term you tried to sneak past me and my people. Oh, guess what? We hear your hate fluently. And home.
Oh,
wow,
that was an amazing read.
Yeah, thank you.
Sorry.
Yeah. No, that's okay. Yeah, would you like to make a comment on the poem, Weaver?
That is, yes. I'm sorry I interrupt you, but that is you did that so well. There is so much in this that is fine and good and should be said, that I applaud the writer, poet, the brave person who decided to get all this out, because I have to say I see his truth, I really do, and I've always had an ache in my heart when people make other people a minority or make them appear to be different, because if you look past all of that, what are we? We are skin and bone and blood and brains, every one of us. There's no difference between me and this girl beside me who might have a different coloured skin. None whatsoever. And I just don't understand the bias and the hate. But, you know, maybe I'm lucky, perhaps. But I thought this was absolutely amazing and very well done.
Absolutely. Thank you for the comment. And we have another caller I'm going to bring on before I make my comment. Hello, area code 503. Who's calling, please?
Hello, this is Emmy.
Hi, I'm Eliana.
Mm-hmm.
How are you?
Oh, I'm good. It's just been...
Did you get a chance to hear the poem that I just read?
Yeah, it was great. There was a lot I could actually say about it because, I mean, when it comes to, like, race in America and specifically racism in America, it's just such a massive, like, topic. I was going to say when I the use of the word thug was very interesting to me because I've actually read papers on this. Thug has become a modern day slur, almost specifically, like, with malicious intent that, you know, would make a lot more sense for, I guess, me to call it that. That makes sense. It was basically a revised Black Brute caricature, which was specifically used as a harmful stereotype against Black Americans. So, yeah, it was an interesting point to me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it was a long read, but it was a pleasure to read. I mean, she had an excellent flow, and her voice stands proud in this, right? You know, like, I mean, It's not hard to see that America's been the bully in the schoolyard, so to speak. And, I thought that was hard-hitting, brought to point here. And then the way she ended it with, "We see you, and the hate you speak. Each bigoted term you tried to sneak past me and my people. Well, guess what? We hear your hate fluently." When you listen to the terms that she spoke, so many truths were expressed in this, right? So just a beautiful poem on the subject of oppression in this world. Very gripping poem. Okay, Weaver, what did you...
Actually, can I... Oh, sorry.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Brought up something else. A huge part of racism in America, too, is ignoring it and hiding it and pretending it's not there. So that's that, yeah. Anyway, sorry.
No, I agree. You know, that when people don't speak up against something, that's when it's allowed to run rampant. So, I agree with what you said wholeheartedly. Okay, Weaver, the next poem. Who's going to read?
I think I'll read this one. Frog Legs by Identity Crisis. Sorry?
No, go ahead.
Okay, no problem. Frog's Legs, I just like the name of it. Oh, I picked a great one, didn't I? Clever me. Frog's Legs, hopping out of the skillet. Hot stuff. End poem. Brilliant. Emmy, would you like to make a comment on this?
I mean, I don't entirely know what to say.
Me neither. That's why I left it to you. Have you ever eaten them?
I think it's a haiku. I've never eaten one. No.
No, neither have I.
When I think of something dancing in a skillet, I'm thinking of, like, mustard seeds.
Yeah.
They, like, pop, like, all... Yeah. Yeah, it's a neat read. I'm going to go ahead and like it, because it's just kind of random and clever.
I agree. I think you probably said more than that you have in the piece of poetry we just read. Yes, I think it's absolutely lovely. I would never eat them, but I can imagine that looking quite interesting. Gray, would you like to make a comment?
Sure. I have eaten frog's legs, and they're delicious.
No! No, don't say that. Okay.
But, okay. This is definitely a visceral and engaging poem. I mean, you can see the... the whole scene going down in her right. It was brilliantly written. Great read as well, Weaver. And I'd like to welcome Laurent Yvonne to the show. Hello, Laurent.
Well, good evening, folks. How are you all?
Good evening.
Good, thank you. How are you?
Frog legs are just like chicken. If you close your eyes, you can't tell the difference. But they're better because they're friends. No.
but you have to catch them before you can eat them.
No, you just go to a restaurant, they serve them, you never know, you never see.
I never will.
Coward. Culinary coward. Oh,
yep. Well. Look, excuse me, I eat haggis and black pudding. That's brave enough,
dear
I think.
God, you're a superwoman then.
I am.
You eat intestine, but you won't eat frog legs. All right.
Well, because the intestines are all sort of cut up and hidden amongst the millet and the wheat and stuff, frog legs are like kind of right in your face.
Sounds like a poem.
The expression. Sure does.
Yeah. Absolutely. Excellent.
Frog Legs, I like the 272. It is kind of reminiscent of a haiku, but he animates the frog legs, but then it gives them action, hopping out, hot stuff. It's the kind of thing that brings a quick smile to your face. It's so pithy, it's perfect.
Yeah.
I agree. It is beautifully written, and it does give you that whole picture in so few words. I mean, we know exactly what's going on. It's dinner time. It's dinner time, and we're having frog legs. Brilliant. I mean, it was very clever and very funny.
Absolutely. I agree with you both. Now, Emiliana, are you able to hang out with us, or do you need to read and go?
I probably need to read and go, actually. I've got an assignment that I still have to work on.
Okay.
Well, if you just give me a moment.
Sure.
If you give me a moment, I'll find Emmy's one, okay? Or would you like me to put one up for you to read at the moment?
It'll
take me a while. Yeah, I'll put one up. There we are. I'm You Set Free by Garden Delights. And Laurent, would you like to read this, please? Laurent, I should say, I beg your pardon.
Certainly, yes. My muse set free, ostensibly resting, today's filigreed muse wants to play. Fond of diaphanous gowns, intricate jewelry, and fanciful language, she spills her glitter across my pages. Favored of her garden of the arabesque tulips, made of carved roseate petals, sprouting from bronze stems. See, they are inlaid upon outsized pergola panels, rhythmically swaying in seafaring breezes. Arise, she bids. Hushed fingers of wispy fog retreat. Our antique sky vessel sojourns round a buttercream sun. Dawn's exuberant arrival has rent powdery blue skies, leaking poetic words now speared below on twisted tree branches. She bemoans this loss of creativity, sorrowing for my missing sleep, revealing all as a fantasy created for our amusement as she dissipates into mist before my eyes. End poem.
Great read, Lord. And I liked it. You know, the muse is stunning. You could picture this beautiful place that he speaks of, this garden. And I thought it was just a fabulous poem. What did you think, Weaver?
I thought it was absolutely beautiful. I do love that kind of poetry. It's lyrical and soft. I like it. Just bear with me 1 second. I'm cutting and pasting as I warble. Delightful, lyrical. And wouldn't you love your muse to... I am looking at the right thing about my muse to set me free. I would like that, yes, very much. And I thought it was beautifully written, so thank you for sharing.
Absolutely. And Emiliana, what did you think?
Yeah, I mean, some of the metaphors here, I mean, maybe they're not metaphors, it's kind of hard to tell, but like some of these lines are just really, really nice. Like, she spills her glitter across my pages. It's almost like how your brain works. It's sort of like, you could think of it as like this writer who's like continuing to take down information onto pages and pages and so on. And so when I think of this, it's almost like someone embedding themselves within someone else's memory as a metaphor for that. And then the other like adjectives are just really, really nice, like buttercream sun. It's like a really nice, soft picture. Powdery blue skies is another good example of that. So there's a lot of great, strong language here. Yeah.
Wonderful comment, thank you. And, Lauren, what did you think?
I love Muse poems, and I really like this one. He can do this. I find the language poetically beautiful, almost stunning. I like what Emiliana said about pastel colors. If a poem could be a pastel poem, despite the energy that it has, it kind of reminds me of that, because it is very soft in the way that pastel paints are. The spilling the glitter outlines the soft colors and the softer language, the buttercream sun, the exuberant arrival of red powdery blue skies. But I love the last stanza, revealing all as a fantasy created for our amusement as she dissipates in the mist before my eyes, as befits any muse. Excellent piece.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think? Welcome to the show, Frank.
No, can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. This was, first of all, I thought it was a fantastic read. But I do enjoy the metaphors here. You know, if there's one thing about poetry, when you have a muse, it just comes alive. And I like the striking metaphors, in particular the ones with the ending there, with the last stanza there about bemoaning the loss of creativity, and then talking about, you know, how it dissipates the amusement into the mist before my eyes. You know, it's a visual poem there, you know, and there's so much to this poem, and that it's just striking how she's able, or the poetess, of which I know very well, is able to convey the prompt in such a magnificent manner. Great poem.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank.
Oh, you're welcome.
Okay, Weaver, would you mind posting for Emiliana? Thank you.
Yes, that's done.
Whenever you're ready.
For you.
Whenever you're ready, Emiliana.
Oh, okay. So this is Moonsong. She peeled my skin over tissued knots wrapped in capillaries, ribs cuddled in red plasma-coated muscles, tickled in the soft exhales and purrs of the air conditioner, and history carved into my nerves. For her to read me in sheets tossed with my hair on springs. I want to dance in puddles of roses and spin below her hand under nimbostratus ceilings and fold my scalp into her clavicle. Wrap wrists, tease, giggles, and wired loops from my jaws. Her lips draw air from my eyeglass bridge platform pulled bare and scribe into my brain. To feel safe in arms in a room pulled to heartbeat and find the pulse in my body persists despite my brain fuzz. I want to lap our dying star a night longer with her. End poem.
Beautiful read. And, you know, it was definitely engaging. You know, it was very visceral and metaphoric. I noticed your author's note says, a poem for the sapphics who've grown tired of being defined by their bones. And I liked it. You know, you stepped outside of your body and went transcendental on this. So beautiful job, Emiliana. And Lauren, what did you think?
This poem takes no prisoners. It's up front. It's bold. It's visceral. She peeled my skin over tissued knots, wrapped in capillaries, ribs cuddled in red plasma-coated muscles, and wrap wrists, tease, giggles, and wired loops for my jaws. Her lips draw air from my eyeglass bridge platform. What a strong, strong poem. Definitely a poem for people, for sapphics who've grown tired of being defined by their bones. Bravo.
Beautiful comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, I thought it was a fantastic read there. I agree with what what Laurent has said. There's a very visceral poem, and the imagery is very stark here. It's very dark, yet at the same time, the imagery there is so it's so remarkable that you're able to actually visualize what she's writing, what she's saying there. And this whole scenario in my head of imagery just popped in my head there. But I think overall, you did a fantastic piece. I mean, a fantastic job with this right here. It was just that overpowering as well. A bit of seductive as well, I would say.
Great comment. Thank you, Frank. And Emmy, would you like to say anything about the poem?
It was more or less inspired by time I've spent with my girlfriend, so it's just one of those things. I guess part of it was feeling vulnerable around somebody else, sort of being similar to peeling your skin off and like showing your insides, and that kind of feeling of like nakedness and whatnot. I guess though, in terms of the overall rhythm, it was just like kind of gushing from like one stanza to the next. I mean, it is a love poem. That I guess was intended to be my take on sensual poetry.
I see. Well, beautiful job. And thank you for sharing and calling in tonight. I appreciate it. Okay, Libra, what do you have next? Absolutely.
Yes.
Have a good night. Thank you.
Right, We have By the Evergreen by Benedict S. Raven. And Frank, would you like to read this?
All right. No, by all means. This is a poem here by Benedict S. Raven. It's called By the Evergreen. And it goes like this. By the evergreen dust glow, where all world does evergreen go? Come back, this still evergreen, your evergreen will show. A wandering body holds no bounds as the travelling route traverse the grounds. Tall and thin, yet short your stay, forever travelling, forever away. Don't leave me, not you too. Come back, Mr. Evergreen. In due time, my boy, for you will see, but the evergreen is where they lay me. In the
beautiful read, Frank. And, it was definitely metaphorically rich and engaging.
Yeah.
Tall and thin, short your stay, forever traveling, forever away. Don't leave me, not you too. Come back, Mr. Evergreen. There's so much to do. And then that's an ultimate couplet. In due time, my boy, for you will see, by the evergreen is where they lay me. Yeah, very haunting, right? Well done. All right, what did you think, Weaver?
Oh, yes, I like this a lot. I think it's got a lovely rhythm to it. I like that. It delights my ear to hear that kind of rhythm. And the word evergreen being used all the way through is just lovely. It binds it all together. I thought it was particularly sweet. I don't know why I think it's sweet, but I just do. In due time, my boy, for you will see, by the evergreen is where they lay me. Oh, yes, beautifully written, lovely story, and thank you for sharing.
Great comment, thank you. And Lord, what did you think?
I like this a lot. It is, not dreamlike, but a little bit surreal, if you will. The Mr. Evergreen could either be a tree, you'd be an individual. Your wandering body holds no bounds as the traveling roots traverse the grounds. So in one sense, it sounds like a tree, but in due time, my boy, for you will see by the evergreen is where they will lay me. Sounds like a person will lay down for his last rest by the evergreen. It's a lovely piece that allows you to imagine several endings, several meanings. I like it.
Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Frank, you read the piece. What did you think?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to agree with Laurent there. The analogy was the perfect analogy there. So I too gravitated to that ambiguity that it could be a tree or it could be a person there. It's just a wonderful, the way it encompassed the whole aspect of what the evergreens can mean, you know, is what I find striking in this poem here. I thought it was a fantastic reading of it. Well, actually, I read, I'm sorry, fantastic poem, they cried. That whole line there, in due time, my boy, makes me recall my acting coach there for several years. He used to say that to me all the time.
Great. Thank you for sharing that, Frank.
You're welcome.
Okay, what do we have next?
Next we have We Are Women, Women by Diane D. Now, I think I might be able to read this one. I think I might be the better voice for it. Yeah.
There you go.
Would one of you gentlemen like to read it? It would be my pleasure. Okay, let's go. Look, I bet it's going to be wonderful. We are women. Milked of all doughty, or whitewashed and anonymous, poured into our moulds like a clay, standing behind the blackout curtain, begging blessings to idle in the sunshine. Petals on tangles of flowers, shedding all skins of abundance, whispering songs fraught of love, whittled and chipped like bone flutes, whistling bamboo sermons of woodwinds. To our forsooth wild horses, unbroken by man, roaming within the untamed lilies, commandeering nature like wolverines, a single unpicked mountaintop buttercup. End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And I liked it, you know. It kind of speaks to the placement of women in society and their role, you know, always behind the curtain and just begging for the sunshine. And then commandeering nature like wolverines, a single unpicked mountaintop buttercup. You know, there's a mysticism and a beauty to the woman that is very harrowing and haunting. You can feel her beauty in this rite, and shines through wonderfully. So what did you think, Weaver?
Yes, I thought it was very good. As usual from our Diane, beautiful. The one thing about being Scottish is when I mispronounce words, you don't know I'm doing it. I love that.
Obedience.
I'm honestly. I go blah, 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 kind of, so you don't. I'm terrible. I really must start learning my words. But I thought it was beautiful. Petals on tangles of flowers, shedding all skins of that, whatever that is, whispering songs fraught of love, whittled and chipped like bone flutes all. Whistling bamboo sermons of woodwinds. Just beautifully, beautifully written. She has a command of her language, which I delight in. I think it's wonderful. So thank you very much, Diane, for sharing that, and sorry for me mucking up the words.
That's okay. And Laura, what did you think?
So often in history, we've heard about the woman behind the throne. Women have been anonymous. I mean, they could sit and work in a particular venue for years, supporting the men. Men would never get the job done if it wasn't for women. And yet when the congratulations are handed out, yeah, the women are strangely anonymous. They've been second-class citizens based on their relative physical strength, with the refusal of the brute mind to recognize the brain they have and the fact that they should probably be in charge of what's going on in the world today. There have been enough women in positions of power. I don't think we have to guess as to whether or not they can handle themselves. Because those first lines, milk of all daughty will, whitewashed and anonymous, poured into our mold like clay. And we treat them all. Similar clay models lined up in endless rows. Just pluck one down from the shelf, and it will do what you want. and then you can just put it back on the shelf when you're done. This is, but we awoke to our forsooth wild horses unbroken by man, and described as a single unpicked mountaintop buttercup, a thing of beauty, fragile by itself at the top of a mountain where are no men around, but they can't reach that spot. Great beasts.
Absolutely. Wonderful comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
Well, first of all, I'm going to commend Lauren. It's beautiful what he said. Ms. Pearl, I agree. There is a sense of reality, and it's not only now, but the reality of the history of society, how much they have to, and, you know, I would say how much they have to live with, you know, for us men, unfortunately. You know, the same feeling to the beauty of what a woman can be when you associate it to flowers. I grew up with flowers. My mother grew me with the flowers, and I always thought her beauty was the key there, the flowers in her garden. And it just made me think of her in many ways. I thought it was just a wonderful illustration of grand, poetic grandeur, poem. And I thought, Weaver, your lovely accent is so beautiful, an accent to admire. So I would take no heed whatsoever to words that perhaps you pronounce differently than you.
Absolutely. All right, Weaver, what do we have next? Oh, we have one by Frank.
Frank? I was going to say. Since tonight I'm feeling more of reading a poem, I added a poem there, it's at the bottom one, that I thought perhaps would fit with it at the front page. I can save this for another time. So if you want, Weaver, if you want, you can pick the one at the bottom that I put there. If it's too much for you, I'll wait for the
problem.
Next poem. Yeah.
No, honestly, no problem at all. I'm practically
all right.
There. Well, I think I'm practically there. Hang on a
moment. I have to get to the phone myself. My phone is pretty slow tonight. I'm sorry.
I'm sorry, I don't actually see it. What's it called?
It's called...
Have you got it?
Just bear.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you, Gray.
All right.
No problem.
There's a poem here. I'll give a quick background to it. It belongs to my edition there, my series of Oscar Wilde pieces. And as always, he's one of my great inspirations. So I took a quote from Compass there, which is at the bottom, which is, it takes a great deal of courage to see the world and all its tainted glory and still love to it. It's a quote by Oscar Wilde, and it goes like this. The poem is called The World I Love. I, who was born into the impregnated womb of this world, am not blinded by its instinctive cruelty, but imbued by the rapture of the beauty of its infused wonders, unfolded and devised by an artist. I do not choose to be born, nor did I choose to be the ordained and saviour of humanity. Instead, I am a creation of reality, a time deemed me to follow its footsteps of dignity. Who am I to pass judgment unto any sinner? And I myself am a sinner by my candid admission. Thus, no man can truly know what the other has been through, without walking in the shadow of that man. So many can claim to aspire to the grandeur of wealth, yet few can ever attain the wealth of knowledge. The ignoramuses will continue to see the world through the tarnished lens of the profligations, and they shall not heed the warnings of their senses to profity corrupted. They are worse than the plague of death, possess the avidity and the tyranny of worthless sanctimony. I see the world with its drear darkness and endless resort of immense despair. Nevertheless, I chose to see more the light shining upon the weeping fields of wreaths and roses. I, who breathe the mist of man's wars, march to the beat of an artistic liberty to which I bow to its reverence. But do not revere me, for I am no one, except the murmurs of the torrential winds evoked. I paint not the face of retribution, but the face of that of which I hold dearly, as my aesthetic aiding. And the world that I paint has no tainted glory, for its glory has not been tainted with the tincture of perversion. Thus, the world I love has no need to be tainted, nor glorified by man's mere egocentricity. In the poem.
beautiful read, Frank. And, you know, that's a hard-hitting poem. You know, it speaks to the ugliness of life, but finding the beauty of it and not letting anybody step on that beauty. So just fantastic read and write. Beautiful job. Very impactful.
Thank you. Thank you very much, sir. Thank you very much, sir.
Absolutely. You bet. Weaver, what did you think?
I agree with you completely. Beautiful piece of poetry with such a message. Who am I to pass judgment unto any sinner when I myself am a sinner by my candid admission? It's true, isn't it? I mean, you know, cast not the first stone. None of us are perfect. And it's great that you can, like, I'm very honest with myself, always have been. I can't kid myself. But people can. People can say, it wasn't my fault, or I didn't do it, or they made me do it. The honesty is what I love, that looking into your own heart and being aware of what you think is right or wrong is absolutely wonderful. And that, again, you know, there's so many stanzas that I could grab here, but this is another one. That's no man can truly know what the other has been through without walking in the shadow of that man. It's so true. You do not know what other people, until we actually have telepathy, we are never going to stop hurting each other. It's just because you can't tell what the other person actually means or truly wants to say. Yeah, I thought it was wonderful. Thank you so much. I'm glad you read it. Thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir.
Absolutely. And Lauren, what are your thoughts?
This is an enormously impressive piece, Frank. You make a point early on. I did not choose to be born, nor did I choose to be the ordained savior of humanity, which kind of sets up the line about the ego, the centricity at the end. You are not blinded by the world's cruelty, but are more attracted to the rapture of the beauty of its infused wonders. You are unable to pass judgment when, by the same token, you need passing judgment on yourself. So one must not do that. And because, again, as you say, no man can truly know what the other has been through. While many people aspire to wealth, true wealth, the wealth of knowledge, because otherwise you're looking at the world through the tarnished lens of their propagations of money, profit, greed, hatred, all the little things that they embellish their life with. So, and you describe them as worse than a plague of death. I absolutely agree with the tyranny of worthless sanctimony. Bravo, that's a great, great line. And why do you see the world with its rear darkness? You choose to see more of the light shining upon the weeping fields of wreaths and roses. And that is the world you love, which has no need to be tainted or glorified by man's mere egocentricity. This is a great piece, Frank.
Oh, I appreciate that. Thank you very much, sir.
Wonderful comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Frank, would you like to say anything about your poem?
Yeah, I mean, I've got the rain, and I just one quick thing. If I leave by, you know, disconnect, I've got a heavy thunderstorm in the background there, but I'll try to stay on as I can. Just a little bit of warning there. The poem itself, really quickly, it's a poem from my series of Oscar Wilde. It was based on that that quote at the bottom there, and Laurent was right, correct there. I choose to think that we ourselves as artists, we should see the beauty of life, but not avoid the negativity or the ugly things of life. I learn to appreciate that the ego itself is a tremendous thing that we have to be very much aware of. But as I said at the ending there, I quote there, that the world that we live, it doesn't have to be tainted nor glory by egocentricity. And there's so much beauty of the world, you know. I often believe that we always seek for a heaven, you know, on the afterworld, but I often believe that heaven, just like hell, is in this earth here, and it's a product of our own creation.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Frank. Okay, Weaver, who do we have next?
Next we have Suburbia by Cedar Chapman. And Gray, would you like to read this, please?
Sure. A tall brick wall surrounds a peninsula oasis, sentineled by an orange zebra arm. Rows of putting green lawns are donned by ornamental SUVs. I drive through, like other zombie suburbanites, nodding to the security guard with my bright white veneers, as if he were St. Peter fronting the iridescent pearly gates. A cartisan of plain of homes and roads and of X and Y coordinates was rubber-stamped by a delirious architect inspired by spiced rum while muttering on a tanned chaise couch. Each functional craftsman house squeezed from the colon of a Ford Model T assembly line. Hockey practices and games, 3 times a week. Mom's holding venti Starbucks, chasing the great one dream, parking minivans at Costco, kids dropped off at an Ivy League daycare with the promise of the next Bill Gates missionary position every Tuesday, while she holds the remote control, fast asleep to the laugh track of friends. Just beyond the brick sanctuary, the scent of body sweat and crack cocaine permeate the summer breeze. Slumlord Rubik apartments flicker their fluorescent lights, sending me hypnotic signals like a neon blue bug zapper. I dream of Winston Smith in 1984 to escape the filthiest back alley amidst rotten lettuce and soggy cardboard, walking over broken syringes and rusty razor blades. Find a $20 middle-aged tour, share an 8-ball to do as I please with no rules. Maybe I'll meet my doppelganger with warm blood pumping through his veins. As I daydream while barbecuing brisket, I look down the block at all the cookie-cutter homes. Thoughts of smashing my head through these gated walls reel by the hazy smokes. Then I smile and wave to SUVs passing by and return to tend my meat. End poem. I had wonderful imagery and metaphors. The monotony of suburban life can be definitely, I'm sure, hard to get through at times. And I thought he captured that beautifully in this write. So wonderful write, Cedar Chapman. Weaver, what did you think?
Yes, I can imagine. I mean, obviously I have no idea what suburban life is like in America, apart from what I see in films and on TV, and that's usually set in the 50s for some reason. But this, I mean, it sounds idyllic to me, but obviously it must be boring if you have to live day after day doing the same things. But I think everybody does, don't they? You do, everybody does. But I like the fact that he's daydreaming while barbecuing brisket. It looks down his block at all the cookie-cutter homes. It means nothing to me, but I imagine I know what it's supposed to be. Thoughts of smashing my head through these gated walls reeled by the hazy smoke. Yes, I can imagine. So, yeah, it must have been quite boring for anybody living in that kind of life, but it sounds to me like it was not too bad, but beautifully written. I really enjoyed it. Gave me a sort of an insight into the mind of somebody who lived that kind of life. So thank you very much for sharing, Cedar.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Lauren, what did you think?
This is a person who I think secretly despises this peninsula oasis. She uses language that is slightly scornful. Ornamental SUVs, zombie suburbanites, a cartisan plane of homes and roads with X and Y coordinates, rubber stamped by a delirious architect, inspired by spiced rum while muttering on a tanned chaise lounge. I don't know, there's a little sarcasm dripping from those words. And the colon of a Ford Model T assembly line, cookie-cutter homes, cookie-cutter people, the absolute most boring, straight-laced, peaceful, comfortable, meaningless life, because what she likes is the hypnotic signals like a neon blue bug zapper that come from the slumlord Rubik apartments who are flickering their fluorescent lights. She dreams of Winston Smith in 84 and all the rot he had to go through. But then she jerks herself back to barbecue and brisket and smiling and waving to an SUV. It's that side of us that wants a wild and crazy and strange and very outre life, but is in a different place and in a different time. Is kind of wedded to that. She has to return to tender meat. How boring. Great piece.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, after that comment there by Lawrence, I don't know if I can say, if I can top that off there. This is just a... This really... Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. The background, so I got a lot of it. This poem really had a whole amalgamation there, a conglomeration, I would say, of so many things, of suburban life. I, too, like Weaver, I don't know what a suburbia is to live in one. I can imagine what it'd be like. But I think that what he describes here in the poem is very vivid. You know, there's this discontent here with the imagery that's being reflected here. I don't know if it's purely sarcastic, purely, you know, whether it's not that this person really is just tired, you know, a bit knackered, I would say. Nevertheless, the poem really does describe what it really means. Anything that flashes on around him is something that he's actually seeing. What I've got to believe through the vision of that very own, being at your own home, in seeing everything surrounded. And I like the notion of the barbecue and brisket. Ever since I've come over here, I've come to be fond of briskets there. So that was a good little innuendo there. But overall, the piece was great. I thought it was very, very much depicted what supposedly suburban life is to its great extent, good and bad.
Brisket ain't cheap.
Oh, I know that, my friend, but I get invited a lot there, Laurent, so I smile a lot.
It's a good move.
When you get invited. Yeah, there you go. I can't complain there.
Great comment, Frank. Thank you.
Oh, you're welcome.
All right, Weaver.
Okay, we have Sound of Men by Irish Rose, and I will read this one. And I say that, but there it's opened. Good. Lovely picture. Right. They gallop across snowy wastelands free, with noses in air on hoofs of steel. These nomads that roam the BLM land have an unholy fear at the sound of men. The stallion slowly sniffs the air for scent. His ears pick up the noise of men. Far clouds billow up, then ascend, alarming the herd with the sounds of men. Tension crashes across each eye and face, white eyes flashing full of fearful escape. Booming sounds smash through low madrone, men on horses, throwing ropes, barking dogs. Then away they break, running down the stream, zigzagging through sage, crisscrossing the plains, rapidly running, rough, rugged, rim-rocked steeps, then over a small ride, climbing mountains, free. End poem.
Beautiful read, Weaver. And I'm going to read my comment that I made on this poem. It says, I said, horses are such an endearing species. I enjoyed your telling of their near capture and ultimate escape. You know, she did a beautiful job of presenting that great poem. And Laura, what did you think?
They're endearing creatures, but they're among the larger animals that we domesticate. And they have such a spirit, which is why we say they have to be broken. And nomad horses who are wary of men are perfectly epitomized in this. The stallion slowly sniffs the air for scent. His ears pick up the noise of men. That's a very portentous phrase. And I like tension crashes across each eye and face, white eyes flashing, full of fearful escape. She really captures the moment when a wild herd is in the process of being chased, either to kill, sadly, or to capture and break. But ever will they run free. As she says in the last stanza, zigzagging through sage, crisscrossing the plains, over a small rise, climbing mountains free. Really captured the whole flavor of it. Beautiful piece.
Absolutely. Great comment, Lauren. Thank you. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
This took me back to the Old West there. Well, actually, not so much the Old West, and it's fairly, but it took me to that, the atmosphere of going out there to perhaps to a Utah, Montana, those areas or Dakotas, where, you see the stallions to some extent, they're still out there roaming about, or perhaps not great in numbers, but they're out there, in the wild. And I like the way he captures the relationship as well with humans and how, fortunately, we had to domesticate them, which I agree. But at the same time, there was a relation that was forged between man and horse in this regard. But it's a lovely, lovely storyline here, which I like the prophet as well. That was a remarkable poem.
Absolutely. Beautiful comment, Frank. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, Weaver, what do we have? Oh, no, actually, you got a comment, Weaver.
Yes, sorry, I was muted, so I do apologize. Right, yes. Oh, I have... There's a thing with me about horses and men riding horses and people riding horses. I understand that, they're there and they can be used for that purpose. But it's, as you said already, breaking them in. I mean, that you're breaking their spirit. And all right, they don't seem to mind too much once it's actually done. But you think it's another beautiful animal being subjugated, being used, being tied up. I know it's got to, it's practical. I understand that totally. And my head understands that. My heart goes, oh, my goodness me. What a shame. With horrible big leather straps around their middle, not being able to breathe properly. God, I'm depressing myself here.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with you.
Katie, if you lived in a world where horses were analogous to cars, the way they were a few hundred years ago and for all of time, you might look at horses differently,
Oh, yeah. No, I say I fully understand the necessity of using what you can to make life easier and grow things and carry things. I understand entirely, but it's just in my heart, I feel sad for them, that's all.
I've never seen a sad, well-cared-for horse.
You make me feel better. Thank you. See, I'm just a sentimental lady. I can't help myself. But yes, beautifully written. Of course it was. I mean, the imagery, you were there, weren't you? It was just lovely. Very well written. And Irish Rose, very well written, Irish Rose, and I enjoyed it. Thank you.
Great comment, Weaver. Thank you. All right, so what do we have next?
Next we have Shadowed Heart by Robert M. And Laurent, could you read this, please?
Oh, it was a pleasure to read Robert's work.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. This is called Shadowed Heart. This jester made its final dance in the shadows of romance, wondering, wishing that perchance his heart may once be heard. If fate would not lend a glance to this martyr of circumstance, wandering blinded and entranced by the hope that feelings blurred. But now his eyes are opened wide, awakening the beast inside, the ferocity he tried to hide, the avatar of his grief. With restraints now cast aside, on clouds of fury he shall ride, no longer will he silently bide this rage beyond belief. The foolish jester on display actually has the guts to say no more will he dance or play, or be willing to pretend. The heart no longer in the way, there is so much hell to pay. All the decades of decay may finally find their end. Yet, so much of me is now mundane. Throughout sorrow's bitter rain, the passion I could not contain seems to have nothing left. This blazing flame cannot sustain, even fueled by all of my pain. So little of me was to remain after life's voracious theft. This shell, now barren of rage, takes its pen from off the page. The lights dim on the ashen stage where the jester's corpse is hung. Wounds that time cannot assuage cause his corpse to warp and age, locking his heart's frigid cage as its songs remain unsung. End poem.
Beautiful read, Laurent. And this is a deeply sad but powerfully engaging poem. You know, you can feel the life of this man and the pain that he feels in his life. And, you know, and then wounds that time cannot assuage cause this corpse to warp and locking and age, locking his heart, his frigid cage, as its song remains unsung. How haunting is that picture? Just a beautiful poem on the subject of the pain that some people suffer in life. And, yeah, beautifully written. Excellent, right? Weaver, what did you think?
Yes, I agree. It's sad, but somebody who had something he wanted to say, and he said it, and it didn't do him any good, did it? Didn't help. But you find that there always has to be one person who will speak up if there's an injustice being done, and that usually is the person who gets the brunt of whatever's happening. This is a bit sad, but I don't know, it seems to me that there's hope if people can stand up and say what they think. There's still hope. So I thought that part of it was absolutely lovely. Beautifully written, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Absolutely, a great comment. Thank you. And Frank, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, this poem took me to a prose gesture there. You know, this is a very, very dark light. It's a very personal light. But the way he describes in his imagery, which I always admire, his dark poetry, is he makes it so vivid, you know, and it almost seems that you can relate to everything that he says in his poem and through his eyes. And I like the way that he brings the emotions, he envelops those emotions and develops them afterwards. And he's just able to grab us from the beginning with his storyline and make us feel the plight of the jester there. So I thought he did a fantastic job. I was very much impressed by this poem.
Great comment, thank you. And Laurent, what are your thoughts?
You know, I agree with what's been said about the poem, and I absolutely admire the content. It is sad, it is dark, but that's not unusual for Robert. What impresses me the most about this is the consummate skill that it took to create something that has the unique rhythm, pauses, and rhymes that this has. He has two stanzas of six lines that rhyme, but in between, one line each that rhymes with the second and the fourth, and repeats that throughout. I just found it that it read so well, and he is so good at creating something that takes his emotions, that takes his imagery, and presents it to us. It really is a great, great piece. Much admiration. I see that we missed his SoundCloud. That might have been better, but nice piece.
You did a great job there, Laurent. Masterful job, I would say.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, Weaver, what did we think? What's up next?
You're going to have to bear with me. I'm actually trying to find a poem to put up that I've been asked to put, and I can't find it. So if you can find it for me and stick it up, it would be great.
Are you talking about Lauren's poem?
Yes, I can't find it. I've looked three times. I don't know what's... Maybe I've got the wrong list.
It's at the bottom of this.
Unless I haven't refreshed that page, which is probably a likelihood. Give me a moment.
Yeah, it's there. Next to that. Right,
oh,
right,
I got it now. Thank you. I hadn't refreshed my page. I do apologize. Because I have looked for it three times. I knew it should be there. Don't let me do this job again. I'm rubbish at it.
No, you're doing a great job. You're doing a great job there.
I get so confused. Okay, here we have it. We have it. It's when I can't find things. I know it should be there. It gets me very upset. Here we are. Laurent, could you please read this for
us? Yes.
Thank you.
I don't know how much depth this has, certainly not the emotion of some of the poems that we've heard, but this is called No Longer a Child. I am not a child, petulant, sotto voce, tight lips trying not to pout, managing to look offended, straining towards adolescence, 8 years old. Au contraire, Eleanor, still a child, although an older child. You're on the cusp of adolescence. Tell them that when they ask your age. On the cusp. What does cusp mean? Sounding slightly mollified. Very close, on the verge, almost there, ready to fall off the edge. You're about to break the tape. Silence. I don't act like a child. More silence. You're beginning to penetrate life's mysteries. Inklings of understanding, glimpses of your future, where you fit into the stone wall as a small pebble. Not a pebble, neither. I know, honey. It was a metaphor for where you fit into the grand puzzle of life. A figure of speech, a word or phrase applied to someone or something to which it isn't usually relevant. Finishing her brunch, whites of eggs like a big pancake, cut into bite-sized squares, 3 pieces of bacon, glass of milk, small ice cream cup. She never liked the yolk. I pop them as snacks. Sadly, my diet doesn't allow bacon. I'm envious, like a child who covets another's sweet. Deep inside, we're still all children. If I were her, I'd pull back. Tell her not to be too eager to escape the nest and face a cold, sometimes harsh and indifferent world. Will she be able to haul in the reins hard enough to turn in a preferred direction, break life to her will, sit tall in the saddle and ride off into a golden sunset, no longer a child? End poem.
Beautifully read, Mark. But, you know, this is just a wonderful situational piece where you can see the older person talking to the younger person and their conversation as it went. And then, you know, being able to put yourself in her shoes and wondering whether she'll be able to haul on the reins hard enough to turn in her preferred direction, break life to her will, sit tall in the saddle and ride off into a golden sunset, no longer a child. Yeah, you know, we all wonder how our children will prevail in this world, and we hope that they will be able to, you know, live that stanza to the fullest. And I thought you did a beautiful job of capturing all of that, Lawrence. Beautiful. And, yeah, wonderful. And so what did you think, Weaver?
I believe she'll be back there.
Oh, okay. Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, this is first of all, I was able to see the, you know, what you wrote there in the notes there. And although I don't know the relationship you have with your granddaughter there, Laurent, I still think that you did an admirable performance for this piece here, just to be able to convey, you know, although there is a, you know, difference of age between one or the other, you know, what really is the most sincere thing is how you relate to that person, you know, in this case, your granddaughter, if I can say. And I thought you did a wonderful job of bringing us that insight as well, to what life is, your life, in comparison to her life, and how you give her counsel, you give her advice, and the sense of when you're telling her not to give up her childhood, because the real world out there, when you become an adult, is very much, as you say, indifferent and harsh, and I completely disagree with that. Just made me shudder there, you know, a little bit when you read that, because it made me understand my own adulthood as well. And I think deep down we never want to leave or escape our childhood, because I think deep down we are a child. Unfortunately, when we're left out in the cold, is when reality kicks in and we realize we're no longer that sheltered child. So it's a very, very, a hell of a write, I would say. I mean, you made me think tonight. I mean, it's a philosophical piece as well, but you bring us the essence of life and what it means in the way that we describe our relations are, whether it's from a friend, whether it's a family, or whether it's just an acquaintance. You know, the way we relate to each other is, I think, the most pivotal and essential thing about our humanity. So I did, bravo. Bravo, you did a fantastic job with this piece. It was just remarkable.
Frank, I want to thank you very much for understanding one important thing. When you have a young person who's trying to be very serious, you got to handle the situation carefully, because the last thing that child needs or should suspect is mockery or disbelief or you know, anything, oh, you don't know what you're talking about kind of thing. You have to take their seriousness and treat it with your own. I mean, I'm always trying to make crack a little joke or something, but no, you've got to take them seriously.
Well, I agree. I mean, if you don't, you know, the fact that you go into, you use the insight of, you know, of your daughter there, I found that very admirable, because you were able to convey what sometimes we take for granted, you know, as adults. We think because they are children, they don't understand our world. But sometimes it takes for us to realize that we were at that point, or one point in our life, we were at that stage. We were children as well. So that's the dichotomy of the relationship, the dichotomy between you and your granddaughter reflected in this poem. I thought it was just incredible, incredible. And it was very intuitive of your part, I would say, as well.
You're very kind, Frank. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Great comment. Thank you. And I'd like to welcome Dexter to the show. Hello, Dex.
What's up, Gray? Glad I could be here tonight.
Great to have you, and thank you for calling in. So, what did you think of Lawrence's poem?
I thought that this was a fantastic write. You know, it has the personal side to it of the conversation. But it, you know, it really brings out a lot of questions and a lot of kind of gray area as far as, you know, what's the right or wrong answer, because you start to realize in life, you know, is it finding, are you finding out all about life, or are you finding out about yourself? Are you finding yourself, or is it all one and the same? Or what's more important? And like you said, the seriousness of it with a child. But it's just the importance of the curiosity of the kid. So I thought that this was a fantastic piece.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. Welcome back, Weaver.
Thank you. I was dropped from a great height.
Yeah.
Yes, I have. It's here and ready. It's Hieroglyphics of Amour by Diamond Dave. And Dexter, hello. Hello.
Hey, Weaver, how are you?
Wonderful, thank you. Just wanted to let you know that as you're with us, this is your one. You're going to love reading this one. Yeah, Hieroglyphics of Amour by Diamond Dave. Thank you.
All right, this is Diamond Dave, Hieroglyphics of Amour. Our love does not speak the ordinary language of Amour. The words are hieroglyphs. Chiseled in stone hearts with pigments of blood and bone, primeval pictures of undying passion, hidden in deep enchanted caverns of fervent affection. Our love is benevolent and brutal, as soft as a whisper, yet tumultuous as the raging storm. It is everything and nothing, the eternal beauty of paradise, and the blazing, boundless fires of hell, the past, present, and future, the tangible and the abstract, ever expressed but never spoken, and wrapped in linen, shrouds of devotion, its symbols shall live till time is no more, and the universe is just a distant, faint memory of the gods. End poem.
Beautiful read, and that definitely was a powerful, hard-hitting poem on the subject of eternal love and the devotion and affection that's expressed in this rite. It was just powerful and palpable as well. What did you think, Weaver?
Oh, isn't that, I mean, any woman would love that from the man she loves, a special language, hieroglyphics, wow, chiseled in stone hearts with pigments of blood and bone. Beautifully written. What a wonderful idea. Thank you. Would it just be all hearts and kisses? Oh, maybe it'd be more than hearts and kisses. But yes, it was really lovely. I'm just trying to think. I'm trying to think what he would be carving out, you know, in the hieroglyphics of love.
There, either.
No, it would be nice.
Nothing wrong with that idea.
As long as he didn't get anatomical, it would be very, very, very sweet. So yes, I thought it was a lovely idea, and thank you for sharing. Thank you.
great comment, Weaver. Thank you. And Laura, what did you think?
Well, the two stanzas, especially in this wonderful piece that caught my attention, that describes so well how love can be brutal, yet kind, soft, yet loud, everything and nothing, and everything between paradise and hell. Our love is benevolent and brutal, as soft as a whisper, yet tumultuous as the raging storm. It is everything and nothing, the eternal beauty of paradise, and the blazing, boundless fires of hell, the past, present, and future, the tangible and abstract. I'm sorry for reading so much on this poem, but those lines just wrap it up so neatly. Beautiful work. Well worth gold.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
I agree. This is a very, the eternal beauty of paradise. You know, we envision so much about what paradise can be. I think, you know, the Greek paradise as well, you know, and I think about what, you know, the Elysian Fields itself and the poetry that I used to read back then. I think the way he just encompassed this poem there with the reverence of love was very, very much touching there for me. And I like the way he talks about the past, present, and future, the tangible and the abstract of what supposedly hell can be, you know, the abstract, the contrast of that. But I like the notion there of the symbols, so to live, time no more, universe is a distant, faint memories of the gods. That's another reference there, as I said, again, the Greek feeling there of the Greek gods there. So I thought it was a wonderful poem, and it also illustrated a bit of Egyptian lore as well, I suppose, as well, but it was a reverential poem throughout.
Absolutely. Great comment. Thank you, Frank. And Dexter, you read the piece. What did you think?
You know, I thought that this was a fantastic, great, you know, what I picture when I think of hieroglyphs, I think of Egypt. And, you know, on so many of those Egyptian hieroglyphs, it's like opposite, you know, it's the, you know, contradicting or whatever it is, it's the opposite. You know, there's heaven and hell, and it's always the opposition, light versus dark. And so I thought he did a very good job of taking the concept of love and really putting it into a hieroglyph, but putting it into words on, you know, those opposing sides to it, like the Egyptians did very well. So, great, right?
Great comment. Thank you. All right, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have The Gift by Duke of STP Dex Bailey. Would you care to read this, please?
All right, doubling down, thank you. This is The Gift by Dexter Bailey. Certain moments in time are imprinted deep within us like rings on an oak stump. They warm in our chests as hot chocolate does on a blustery cold winter's day. Heat that ignites our journey and carries us the distance as a daily reminder delivered to our soul by a ringmaster suited spider monkey flying a hot air balloon. The fact that life may never get within a stone's throw of that encoded timestamp in our mind again is not only possible, but the odds-on favorite. A baseball-sized pill to swallow, yet the grand production floats down your street day after day, bringing this package to your door. Obligated to at least get out of bed, greet the convoy with a smile, and a wave as you watch it drift off. Again, into the clouds as quick as it came. Memories are unspoken promises, so true and pure that no matter the weather, rain, sleet, snow, will always arrive when we need them to the most. For that I love you as the sun loves the earth. With a pull so strong, right before dawn, in my darkest hour, I see you in the horizon, giving me that beautiful burden to hold on. End quote.
Well, such a touching write. You know, it's very personal. And you have fantastic metaphors in there as well, with especially your opening stanza. They warm in our chest as hot chocolate does on a blustery cold winter's day. Heat that ignites our journey and carries us the distance as a daily reminder delivered to our soul by a ringmaster and suited spider monkey flying a hot air balloon. You know, we don't know what brings us love, but we definitely try to hold on to it for as long as we can, even up to the point of death where we're afraid to losing them. So just a beautiful heartfelt write. And what did
Thank you
think, Weaver?
Yes, this brings a lump to the throat. Beautifully written. So much feeling. Lyrical and sweet. And memories are unspoken promises. So true and pure that no matter the weather, rain, sleet, snow will always arrive when we need them to the most. A lovely look at life and take on life. And the loss, which we have felt, haven't we? So, yeah, beautifully written, and thank you so much for sharing that with us.
Absolutely. And, Lauren, what did you think?
Dexter realizes the importance of moments that are time-stamped, as he says, that they warm in our chest as hot chocolate does on a blustery cold winter's day. We keep those memories alive, deep within us, and realizing, and he calls it a baseball-sized pill to swallow, that moment may never come again. But it is possible. And the memories, which are unspoken promises, they never let you down. They always keep their promise, because they're always reliable. And that last stanza, for that I love you as the sun loves the earth, with a pull so strong right before dawn. In my darkest hour, I see you on the horizon, giving me a beautiful burden to hold on. Outstanding phrasing. This is filled with love, Dex, and sadness at the same time. It's beautifully done.
Thank you. Thank you. And Frank, what, Picasso, what did you think?
Well, you know, this song actually, what came in my head was a song Memories there, because you certainly made me nostalgic of this piece here. You know, the whole distinction here of what, the transit period of time, time passes by. And 20 years go by and we don't realize, just how quick time passes. Yet what stays and remains, despite the passage of time, are these coding things which we call memories, which are a gift I see in this poem here, and I agree. The way you took this poem, the way you read it, I could tell how much, really how passionate you were in this write. The notion of death and the distinction of life, they join hand to hand or hip to hip. Sometimes we just don't want them to go. Sometimes we just want them to stay. And life in itself is a journey. And unfortunately, death is one that we don't invite in life. But it comes. Great, great performance. Great piece.
Excellent comment, Frank. Thank you.
Thank you.
And Frank. Dexter, would you like to say anything about
you,
right?
Yeah.
No, thank you, everybody. I think you guys nailed it very well. Appreciate the time.
Absolutely. Thank you for calling in to share that, Dexter. Appreciate it. Okay, Weaver, where are we going now?
Now we have Every Burnt Poem Eclipsed by Your Presence by Freya, and I will read this one. Here we are. Starting from scratch, with new letters, the four jewels of study and one diamond, brush ink, paper, inkstone, and you. Grinding fresh pigment in rainwater, ink sticks to inkstone, as black as endless night before your advent. Compressed from every burnt poem eclipsed by your presence, rubbing first clockwise for all you have added to the depth of life, then counterclockwise for the inhibitions your steady gaze has freed me from. The pool grows dark, reflective, wolf hair brush, goat hair brush, join. I would start with something simple to see, but complex to understand, like the palms of your hands, inking every line and scar with black, then with a handprint on rice paper, washing clouds in clean water. I would lift letters from the imprint of your destiny, like that day you massaged my open heart back to life. I would draw the lines of your wrist veins too, including the scars. From all these, I would form consonants. With fresh red lips, you kissed the paper as if it were my lips. Then my forehead, the translucent curtain where my thoughts form an altar to you. From these shapes and a few others, like the way you held my face when we first kissed, I would form the vowels, brushstrokes and meanings, yours alone, vowels so tender, my eyes splash punctuation. Now I could start to describe your effect on this now molten heart, this porcelain clay pulled from the reiki kiln of burnt leaves and flowers. End poem.
Beautiful read. And, I really enjoyed that. That was an engaging, fascinating, right? It's endearing. You can feel the love and the passion in this for that person that she has. And I just thought it was beautifully written and excellent read as well. Lauren, what did you think?
This is a beautifully written and fascinating piece, because we get that first stanza, started from scratch with new letters, the four jewels of study and one diamond, and she lists brush, ink, paper, inkstone, and you. The way Freya describes the grinding of fresh pigment in rainwater, ink stick to inkstone, is a fascinating little bit of information on how pigment is created, but then to follow it up with as black as endless nights before your advent. Now we see what was before and what is after. And she begins to take the act of creating the ink and the act of using it with their own relationship, rubbing first clockwise for all you have added to the depth of life, then counterclockwise for the inhibitions your steady gaze has freed me from, and on down through mentioning the wolf hairbrush, the goat hairbrush, inking every line and scar with black. I love what she did with her imagery and the way she paid attention to the prompt. Extremely, well, actually, Ray, you said, I loved your fascinating, engaging, and endearing take on the prompt. I absolutely agree with you.
Great comment. Thank you, Lawrence. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, first of all, I have not seen the prompt, but I can imagine what this prompt would be. And I like what the lines that Laurent was saying about the counterclockwise inhibitions. You know, it starts off really with an ambiguous type of beginning, but then it starts off with the inspiration to this poem here and how much this person means to the poet. I like the vivid imagery, the metaphors here. You know, I like in particular the one with the pool grows dark reflective, you know. I thought that was great. I like the way she brings us in with the scars there. And I like the way she, all these lines here are very beautiful lines, and there's some seduction to this poem as well. Overall, I thought it was just a wonderful interpretation of what that prompt is. I thought she encapsulated it just reading and hearing them. It's brilliant.
Well said. Thank you, Frank.
Very well.
And Dexter, what did you think?
I thought this was an amazing write. The stanza that really stood out to me was, with fresh red lips, you kissed the paper as if it were my lips. Then my forehead, the translucent curtain, where my thoughts form an altar to you. It's just brilliant imagery, and you know, just there's so much, and it's just so intimate, you know, of with using the metaphor and of, you know, of the kisses and the hands. Just everything about this is just brilliantly weaved together in a perfect way, I thought. So very well done.
Great comment, Dexter. Thank you. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
Next we have Our Dialect by Forgotten Dream. And Laurent, would you care to read this?
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you kindly.
Forgotten Dream gives us Our Dialect. We speak in a series of glances, language of raised eyebrows, dark lashes fluttering above pale moon faces, and wetness that sparkles in twin stares. Sharing sideways smiles, we swap volumes in a string of tiny dances, cheeks swelling with flirty flush, commissures stretching in arabesques and pilés. Mirrored lips meet. Whispers of burgeoning world pass between kisses. New idioms birthed in bounding chest that spill from behind teeth like cascading stars. We move in sync like swimmers. Hands find curving hips and jutting shoulders, tangling in the bedsheets of hair. Bodies burst like supernovas, eclipsing surrounding galaxies. A shimmering glow radiates from dewy, humid skin. Fingers weave together like a loom, tips softly stroking piano key knuckles, pulses of notes talking in song, the music of us harmonizing. End poem.
Beautiful read, Laurent. You know, when two people make music, that's a beautiful thing. And I thought she captured that wonderfully in this poem. You know, I really like the innocence of her first few stanzas. We speak in a series of glances, a language of raised eyebrows, dark lashes fluttering above pale moon faces, and wetness that sparkles in twin stares. sharing sideways smiles, we swap volumes in a string of tiny dances, cheeks swelling with flirty blush, commissures stretching in arabesque and flies. And, yeah, just beautiful. Beautiful, right? Excellent read, Laurent. Weaver, what did you think?
I like the fact that we've got dancing and music being played. Oh, beautiful things. I love this. We moved in sync like swimmers, hands finding curving hips and jutting shoulders, tangling in the bed sheets of hair. Isn't that just beautiful? Yes, I envy anybody who can write like this. It's pretty and gentle and delicate and just lovely. It just takes me in every word. Oh, beautiful. So yes, I really enjoyed it, Sam. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Great comment. What did you think, Laurent? Sorry, you read it.
Our dialect. Huh?
Yeah.
Yeah. The dialect, the series of glances, raised eyebrows, dark lashes fluttering, sideways smiles, mirrored lips, hands finding hips and jutting shoulders, bodies bursting, fingers weaving. These are all the parts of the dialect, of the language of love. Not only the spoken language, the body language, and what the bodies offer to each other without verbal interaction, but what each body transmits to the other in a separate language all of its own. Beautifully done.
Great comment. Thank you, Laurent. And Frank, what did you think?
Well, you know, I'm going to have to agree there with Laurent again. I mean, he brings up this essentially what I was, what I conveyed, actually not what I understood, McFadd. You know, the whole metaphors here, the ones that he talks about, is a dialect of its own. But I also like the metaphorical essence to this poem and how music just, we are imbued in itself with the rapture and our lovemaking and just how much it really... we relate and create our own music there. So I thought this poem was beautiful, beautiful poem. And you can't go wrong with that type of lovemaking. That's all I've got to say there.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Thank you, Frank. And Dexter, what are your thoughts?
I thought it was a fantastic piece, you know, with a lot of very central imagery. And we move in sync like swimmers, hand finding curve hips, I think was my favorite part. I thought that this was a amazing write.
Great comment. Thank you, Dexter. Okay, Weaver, what do we have next?
We have Poetic Melodies by Betty Page. And I will read this one. Paint Melodies. Love, rainbow colors shimmering in kaleidoscopes. Red, orange, yellow, green, aqua blue, violet, gold, silver, and bronze. Pen with crimson ink flowing from my heart to yours. Pretty melodies. Language of pure love. Genuine, loyal, faithful, infinitely true. Tattoo on my heart. My name in sweet poetry, as I will on yours. Our two hearts entwine, dancing these moonlight's fine stars, one with the universe. Music plays gently, we're kissing intimately, passionately, true. Silently gazing, no words now need to be said. Our love's poetic. End poem.
Wonderful read on that poem, and what an endearing poem it is. You know, it's filled with such passion and desire of two people coming to being together. And, you know, when our bodies speak the language of love, it's a powerful thing. So it was an amazing job on the prompt. And what did you think, Laurent?
was on mute. It's hard not to like this piece, which offers the language of pure love, genuine, loyal, faithful, infinitely true. Sometimes you just don't need to get too complex when discussing love. And the way she has written such an engaging textual melody, and that's what it is, incorporating so many colors, which always livens a poem, and two hearts dancing neath moonlight's fine stars, one with the universe. That's the way it is, you know. We tend to wax poetic when we're in love at a special moment, and I think this exemplifies that perfectly.
Great comment, Mark. Thank you. And Frank, what did you think?
I thought it was a fantastic poem. You know, she's used to, you know, we're used to hearing her poetry, her central poetry, but now this poem here was romantic. I really enjoyed the romantic essence of this poem. And like, it was a collage of just your heart, you know, pouring out your heart here, talking about pure love, you know, something of which sometimes we can't really find much, you know. And I like the way she talks about, you know, how it really, that reminiscent feeling of how it makes her feel, you know, with the kissing, you know, the notion of no words, you know, to express what you feel. It's the most beautiful sentiments. I thought she did a fantastic job with this poem, and it was a great read there, Lisa.
Thank you.
You're Thank welcome. You, Frank. All right, Weaver, what do we have next?
We'll have it when I find it. Here it is. Yes, here we are. Sorry about that. I lost it. I've got five screens open, and I should have them numbered. Okay, this is Words Didn't Cover You with Ember Blankets by Chinesca.
Okay.
And
all right. I have a SoundCloud for this one. So I will.
Oh, good.
Unspoken. Reaching suspended essence, lifted wings, touching truth. Wandering willows gently billowing through infinite waves. Language made of us. As rolling tumbling weeds find destination, bodies are rendered useless, clothes fallen off knot by knot. Shooting stars bolting through cribs of sanctuary, a boat, quite sturdy, wood birch, floating gently, with salt water lapping against soft skin. There is that curious old tree, strangely silent, battle-battered, worn, surviving winter, filling passionate, frozen frames. Kissing porcelain petals while collapsing hands rooted our feet, twined among blossom bouquets of soft spring, melting, moist meadows. Tulips towers tall, overshadowing any whispers. Quietly, everything is snowed in.
Well, beautiful SoundCloud. And, you know, that's metaphorically rich, that poem, but steeped in emotion. You can feel the passion and the desire that he has for his loved one. And I really like his observational points where there is that curious old tree, strangely silent, battered, worn, surviving winter, feeling passionate, frozen frames. That paints such a haunting picture. Beautiful write and a fantastic read, Chinesca. Weaver, what did you think?
Oh, it was, isn't it? Beautifully, beautifully. The sound card was lovely. I really enjoyed it. A boat, obviously, I loved sailing, so this stanza particularly I liked. Shooting stars boating through a cribs of sanctuary, a boat, quite sturdy, a wood birch, floating gently with salt water lapping against soft skin. There is nothing more relaxing than a sailboat. Absolutely wonderful. And then you have this beautiful one about the curious old tree, strangely silent, battered, worn, surviving winter. Just lovely. All of it was so nice, and I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for sharing.
Beautiful comment. Thank you, Weaver. And Laurent, what did you think?
Laurent, are you on mute?
No, I think he's dropped. Frank, what did you think?
You know, this is just a very powerful poem. You know, it talks about the contrast there of what human nature and how it binds us with Mother Nature there. This is really, you know, the lines there that I believe we've talked about, the old curious old tree. I thought that I related to that as well. I like the notion there of how he brings his metaphors to describe, you know, what it is, what we can find, what is in itself within our two natures there. And I find it very compelling, this poem. Really, I like the title, the way he talks about that. And the way he does a magnificent job there, always in his songclubs and also in his poetry. Some might understand it as abstract, but, you know, his poetry is enriched with layers of deep introspective thoughts. So he did a fantastic job.
Great comment, Frank. Thank you.
You're welcome.
All right. Well, we have 4 minutes left in the show. I don't think I'm going to try and push a poem through. But I just want to say I appreciate you all calling in and sharing your hearts, your minds, your voices, and most especially your time. Much love, everybody. I hope you have a wonderful week.
Take care,
thank you.
Friends.
Thank you, and thank
care.
You.
Get better
there,
Weaver.
What, darling?
Get better there.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that. Please repeat it.
Yes. Get better there. I hope you're feeling better there afterwards.
Thank you. See, my hearing is gone as well with this horrible cough.
Yeah,
thank you very
not
much.
A problem,
I'm sure
yeah.
it'll get better.
Take care. Take
thank
care.
You
you're
too.
Doing a great
bye
job.
Bye.
You're doing a
good night,
great
Gray.
Job there. You're
good night.
Doing. Take care.
Bye.
Good night, everyone. Bye.
Adios.